Well, the fact that we can print our own money is ultimately going to be our undoing.
Peter Schiff knows a thing or two about financial collapse, having predicted one in this country, and also having made a lot of money surfing the vagaries of the international market with Euro-Pacific Capital. Peter Schiff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been at zero interest rates now for 7 years. Anything that happens for 7 years, does it not almost by definition, especially if it's an unusual, a historically unusual thing, doesn't that automatically create a bubble?
Well, it has created a bubble. And I think it's an enormous bubble. And in fact, the reason that interest rates have been at zero for so long is because I think the Fed is cognizant of this, even though they don't admit it publicly, which is why they're so reluctant to raise rates, you know, even to 0.25% or 0.5%, because this bubble is just so big. And if you can go back and recognize how much damage Alan Greenspan did by keeping rates at 1% for about a year and a half, and then slowly raising them back up to 5.25% over a year and a half period, right? That's what really inflated the housing bubble, and that led to the financial crisis of 2008, trying to resolve the malinvestments that were the byproduct of that bad monetary policy. So think about how bad that was, and now imagine how much worse it's going to be, because the problems that Greenspan created will pale in comparison to the ones that Bernanke and Yellen have created. And so when this bubble bursts, the fallout's going to be much bigger.
So where do you see the bubbles within the market as a result right now?
Well, the bubbles are pretty much everywhere. They're in all financial assets. So they're in the stock market, they're in the bond market, they're in the real estate market, they're in the U.S. dollar. That could be the mother of all bubbles, and that might be the first one to pop, because in order to keep all the other bubbles full of air, the Fed has to keep interest rates at zero. I think they're about to launch a fourth round of quantitative easing. Everybody just assumes, right, that the Fed's going to raise rates. That's not going to happen.
Under Obama, probably won't happen.
I think under anybody, yeah. At least until there's a currency crisis. And remember, about a year ago, Janet Yellen promised that she would reduce the Fed's balance sheet back down to about $1 trillion. Now, of course, it's actually grown during that time. It's about $4.5 trillion. But the markets are anticipating this tightening. I mean, the Fed has never really reduced its balance sheet. It's just been a one-way ticket. And now Janet Yellen has promised to reduce it. Not only is she not going to, you know, fulfill that promise, I think she's going to double the balance sheet again. I think they have no alternative. If they want to prevent this bubble from popping, they got to fill it with more air. And that's what they're going to do. Of course, all of this is destructive. What the Fed should do is let these bubbles pop. They should raise interest rates substantially and let the chips fall where they may. We need to restructure this economy. We need to go from a borrow and spend economy to a save and produce economy. We have to acknowledge that the debt is unpayable, just like Puerto Rico did. It has to be restructured. We have to build a recovery on a sound foundation. We can't just build it on a bigger bubble than the last one that popped.
And no one wants to take that risk politically. I mean, do you see anyone even running for president, even the fiscal hawks like Rand Paul, for example, or Ted Cruz, do you see them saying, yeah, what we really need to do here is raise interest rates so much that our debt service is going to quadruple overnight?
Well, you know, they're not running for Fed chair, so they're not going to talk about what
you're saying
happened.
That the Federal Reserve is independent from the executive branch? What?
Yeah, but I mean, look, that is not a winning campaign message. You know, Let's swallow this bitter tasting medicine because it'll actually work. You know, what the voters want is snake oil. They want something that makes them feel good. So if Rand wants to win, he can't necessarily lead with this message. But I support Rand. I think Rand really understands the severity of these problems. And, you know, if it hits the fan on his watch, I feel much more comfortable that we might actually do something constructive about the problems instead of trying to paper them over with more stimulus that's only going to make them worse.
What aren't we seeing, right? So, when you have a bubble kind of thing, this time it's different. You know, we can survive differently. What are we failing to imagine right now as a thing that could happen resulting in the consequences of these actions?
Well, I think it's a failure. The same group of people. Remember, the people who think that everything is great, right? The people that think that the Fed monetary policy has succeeded and that the U.S. economic recovery is legitimate, right? These are the same people who had no idea that there was a financial crisis coming. These are the people who in 2008 thought everything was great. including Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen, they didn't even know a recession was coming, even though one started, you know, 7 months earlier. These guys were still blind to the greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. It was around the corner, and they couldn't see it. These are the same people who were buying the dot-com stocks and didn't realize that was a bubble. So the mainstream, the investors, you know, government, central banks, they never see a crisis until after the fact. And then they go back and they say, well, nobody could have possibly predicted this. You know, this was a complete random occurrence that had nothing to do with our policy. But of course, that's never the case. The events of 2008 were highly predictable to anybody who had a rudimentary understanding of what was going on. But these guys were in denial, and they're in denial again. So the problem is they never understood the cause of the bubble that burst in 08. They didn't understand the Fed's role in creating it. So they don't understand that the Fed has simply exacerbated all the problems that everybody believes they solved.
Now, bears are always wrong until they're right. So in the interim, we've had stock market run up for a good while now. You know, gold hasn't hit 5,000 yet as a result of various things. Are you able to still make money playing arbitrage on these bearish predictions that haven't yet happened the way that you might have spelled out?
You know, I'd rather be wrong until I'm right than right until I'm wrong. Because at least,
this is some Donald Rumsfeld stuff you're breaking onto me right now.
Yeah, because if you're right in the long run, you get to keep the money. If you're wrong in the long run, you lose the money that you never really had. Right? You have paper profits that vanish. And I would rather patiently wait for real profits to materialize. But the problem with being right and being early is that everybody else thinks you're wrong, and eventually some people question it themselves, right? They think maybe I'm the one that's wrong and everybody else is right because it's taking so long, because you never know exactly how long it's going to take for the masses to wake up and realize that they're wrong. But you know, history shows that if you're patient and you know what the fundamentals are and you stick to your guns, in the long run you're going to make money. But it does mean that it's going to be difficult in the short run, because you're going to be tested. You know, the market generally makes it hard to do the right thing and easy to do the wrong thing, right? If you do the wrong thing, if you do what's popular, chances are that whatever you buy is going to go up after you buy it, because more people are making the same mistake as you and they're bidding the price up. And the things that you know represent real value, the contrarian play, you know, you might buy something and it might continue to go down because people still don't recognize the value that you see. The hard part is knowing when it's going to turn. And I think that's almost impossible. I mean, I guess the people who can succeed spectacularly can time it better. And I don't necessarily know how to time it, but I can figure it out in advance. And I'm usually early. But being early is a lot better than being late.
Doesn't the U.S. have some kind of success curse at play here, which is to say, we are a reserve currency. We are a huge thriving economy, even when we're not thriving particularly well. We are this thing, this juggernaut. And so, you know, we can't be a Greece because we can print our own money and we can have this economic engine that's always going to outpace whatever Greece does in any given period of time. So is that a hedge against the darkness that you see, or is that more like inflating the ultimate final bubble?
Yeah, well, the fact that we can print our own money is ultimately going to be our undoing. It's because we can print our own money that the world has given us so much rope, which we've unfortunately hung ourselves with, or we're in the process of hanging ourselves with it. And, you know, the vibrance that you talk about to the U.S. economy is merely a function of our ability to keep borrowing money that we can't repay, to keep spending money to buy stuff that we don't have the industrial capability to produce. So as the world continues to vendor finance a customer that can't possibly pay, yes, we can continue to have what looks on the surface to be this robust, thriving economy. But all of that can change very quickly when the perceptions of those doing the lending change and the foreign suppliers who are giving us all the merchandise. I mean, think back to how quickly the Soviet Union collapsed. I mean, it was a huge monolith, a superpower. The world basically was America and the Soviet Union. It was like an empire. And it didn't take very long, and all of a sudden it wasn't there, right? It just disintegrated. And so things change quickly when they change. And this idea that America is this all-powerful nation, it's just an idea now. It's based on a myth. At one time, that was true. We were a mighty nation. we did manufacture the goods that everybody wanted to buy, right? We were the lowest cost producer of manufactured goods. We had the most economic freedom. We had the lowest rates of taxes, the fewest regulations. We were a very free society. It wasn't a society about government and about welfare and wealth redistribution. Right, when my grandparents came to this country, there was no Social Security, there was no welfare, there was no minimum wage, there was no income tax, there was no Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, there was nothing. My grandparents came here poor in search of freedom. They weren't looking for government help. They wanted the government to leave them alone. If they wanted government help, they would have stayed in Eastern Europe. But they came here for freedom. And so we built an incredible country based on those principles. We've abandoned those principles, and the wealth has been abandoned as well. Now we're just an illusion. We have all this debt. We have to import all the things that we can't make. And we rely on the foolishness of the rest of the world to continue to finance it based on the legacy of what America used to be.
Speaking of our creditors, China, which has gone through all kinds of hell the last 3 weeks, and at least in the stock market here, a lot of people criticize the Chinese economy for having its own system of bubbles. It started like in real estate, it's moved on to the stock market, it's frothing here and there. As a bubble watcher, what do you see in China going forward?
Yeah, you can't help but create these types of bubbles with the type of monetary policy that China has. But China has this monetary policy because America has this monetary policy. They have made the mistake of pegging their currency to the dollar. And so they import our monetary policy. They have to keep their interest rates artificially low. They have to keep increasing their money supply to keep up buying up the dollars to prevent their currency from rising, which is a mistake. A rising currency is what the Chinese need. That would mean that the Chinese citizens would enjoy greater purchasing power, and they could buy all the things that are currently being bought by Americans. I mean, I think China would be better off if when Chinese factories produce stuff, they distributed them in Chinese stores to Chinese people instead of paying to ship them across the Pacific so that Americans can buy them with money they borrowed from the Chinese. So, but this monetary policy is going to create property bubbles. It's going to create stock market bubbles. The solution is to take the air out of the bubble by letting interest rates rise, letting their currency appreciate. Now, of course, they've been resisting this, even though it's actually a good thing. But the country that has the most to lose from the Chinese waking up is America, because we've been riding on their gravy train. But of course, in the long run, the best thing that China can do is cut us off. It's like if you're, you know, hooked on drugs, you know, your drug dealer would do you a favor to stop supplying you with drugs. I mean, you might not appreciate it in the short run when you're going through withdrawal, but if you actually, you know, kick the habit, then, you know, you would appreciate the fact that the drug dealer cuts you off, right? So long term, they should cut us off this monetary drug so we can fix the problems in our economy.
Peter Schiff, no more heroin for America. Thanks very much for talking to Reason TV. For Reason TV, I am Matt Welch.